Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Peter Gaiman, Professor of Old Testament and Biblical Languages at Shepherd Seminary. This podcast is dedicated to discussing issues related to Scripture and theology. For more information, visit petergaiman.com.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on when you are listening to this episode. It is good to be back with you. I just got back from Boise, Idaho, where I was able to have a good time of fellowship with Grace Bible Church, Boise. We had a conference on woke ideology there with the church and was just really encouraged by everyone at the church, just really loved their heart for the Lord, their desire to learn and to grow and to understand. So was able to spend a few days with them and just enjoy the scenery around Boise. So it was a lot of fun and enjoyed that time, but happy to be back in the state of North Carolina. And today we are going to talk about social media. And one of the reasons for this as a motivation is really because Hootsuite comes out with their annual digital survey every year around the beginning of the year. And so I just attained access to it. And so I wanted to glean some data from some of their findings and talk about what this means for Christianity, how as Christians we ought to think about this from a biblical worldview, what that means as far as what we experience temptations, what we experience with our friends, our neighbors, etc. It's kind of interesting. I was just thinking as I was about to record this podcast, I was thinking it's pretty strange that we could talk about social media on one podcast and talk about all these other crazy biblical issues on other podcasts, whether it be what is the sin of Ham and all those things. But to a certain degree, the podcast audience, you know who you are since you're listening to this, I suppose. You must enjoy at least some of these episodes if you listen to this. So if nothing else, I think it's important and interesting for us as Christians to think through. And so I will not be offended if somebody says, you know what, I do not want to learn about this issue, and so you don't listen to that episode. I understand that's how it works sometimes. But I think social media is one of those essential things that Christians need to think about. Even if you don't use social media, you at least need to be aware of what's going on because everybody else uses social media, and that's really the key takeaway. If you look at the digital survey that Hootsuite put out in 2022, they actually say that there are 4.6 billion users of social media. 4.6 billion. So the majority of the world is on social media. And the social media usage has gone up almost, 424 million is what they say over the last year. So that's a 10.1% increase in social media usage from 2020 to 2021. Over the year 2021, there was a 10% increase in social media usage. Now, one of the things that they also say is that the average time spent using social media, so this is across the board, is 2 hours, 27 minutes, so about 2.5 hours that is used by the average social media user. Now, that's pretty significant, especially if we're talking about some people not using it that long. So remember, for every social media user that uses social media for 10 minutes, 30 minutes a day, that means there's somebody else making up for that lack of 2.5 hours because it's an average of how that is used. One thing that's also interesting that I found rather surprising is that the average number of social platforms that each individual uses is 7.5. So we'll talk more about that maybe a little later, but that's surprising to me because there are a significant amount of a variety of applications that individuals are using versus just identifying maybe one person using Facebook, one person, whatever. They're using 7.5 on average, and that's pretty crazy. Now, as far as big takeaway overview issues, Another big takeaway is that although 58% of the world uses social media, that percentage increases drastically with regard to those who are in the lower age range. So population 13 and above, those individuals, 3/4, 74.8% use social media. And that's pretty significant. It's slightly skewed in favor of male versus female. So the total percentage of male social media users is 54%, 46% for female. So it's pretty interesting as you go down the list how social media is here to stay. It's obviously the most significant form of internet usage in our day and age. Now, if you think about which social media apps are the top, attain the top usage, this may not surprise you. Facebook comes in at a very, very top level, significantly number one. You have Facebook, YouTube, and WhatsApp being the top three, and Instagram coming in at 4. What that also means, by the way, is that Facebook, or now as they've changed their name to Meta, entertaining with the Meta universe, the Facebook essentially owns 3 of the top 4 social media apps. So Facebook, WhatsApp, and Instagram are all owned by Meta or Facebook. So that means that one company is largely controlling the majority of social media usage. I suppose what was more interesting to me is that Twitter didn't even make the top 10. And that was interesting to me because Twitter seems to get a lot of press, especially in some of the news cycles and things like that. But Twitter comes in a lot less. We're talking in millions, Twitter having 436 million users versus Facebook, number one, Facebook having 2,910,000,000. So way above the Twitter usage. And yet Twitter is obviously really significant with regard to media and reporters and just finding out news immediately. And so that was interesting to me with regard to examining those findings. YouTube coming in at 2nd, that is a very useful tool in many people's arsenal, and it really is a social media platform. I mean, you think about all the commenting that goes on and the discussions and how that's used. It really is viewed that way. But let's not deny the major takeaway that Facebook really does dominate the social media market, and they through their multiple apps, through Instagram, WhatsApp, etc., they have really done quite a number on having a significant influence on that. Now, for those individuals who are 16 years old to 64 years old, the individuals who label their favorite social media platform, think about what the correct answer would be. This, again, was maybe surprising to me. WhatsApp was actually labeled as the top or favorite social media platform. WhatsApp and then Instagram was 2nd and Facebook was 3rd. Again, this is from 16 to 64. These individuals labeled WhatsApp as number 1, Instagram 2, and Facebook 3 as their favorite. And Twitter comes in there at number 8, I think, on their list. So WhatsApp obviously being a favorite because of the ability to message, to FaceTime, those kinds of ideas. Now, as I continue to scroll through the different data points, they go into some advertising social media statistics about how many of social media's income actually comes through the advertising market. This doesn't surprise us, I don't think. But according to this survey, the Hootsuite survey, the year-over-year change in social media advertising spending was an increase in 17.4% or $23 billion. So that's quite a lot of money. And it's, you know, I just tend to see more and more ads on social media. That makes sense. So obviously there's a section, if you're familiar with social media at all, you've heard the phrase TikTok. And TikTok is a popular social media platform. And for those who use TikTok, the primary age group of that audience, I guess you could say, is 18 years and older, which is kind of surprising to me. You have the advertising on TikTok really tries to target those 18 to 24 years of age, and then it tapers off from there. So 25 to 34 gets less. You have about 25% of the marketing or the advertising going toward the 18 to 24 year olds, and then you have 25 to 34 having slightly less than that, and then it really drops off when you go older than that. 35 and over really doesn't have as much with regard to that. But TikTok definitely has, as far as their advertising profile is, they consider the 18 to 24 year old range as prime advertising, and how all that works out. Now, with regard to what my plan is, by the way, I should clarify this, is that I'm just working through their report and giving some of the details that I think you might find interesting, and then I'm going to summarize and give some biblical application to this. So I should have said at the beginning, but what can you do? So with regard to social media and shopping online, internet users who are 16 to 64 engage in weekly shopping activities online. So in the survey, 58% of individuals surveyed said that they do online shopping at least once a week. And so that includes almost 30% doing grocery shopping online. And that could be buying secondhand materials online through like eBay or something like that for 15% of the individuals. And then you also have the internet being used for a price comparison for shopping, and almost 20 or 18% of individuals have used a buy now, pay later service. So essentially almost 60% of the internet users buy something online every single week. That's an incredible, and just, you know, full disclosure here, my default, in contrast to maybe previous generations, is that if I need something, I check online first. And that's usually my typical go-to, is I look and say, well, you know, am I able to find what I need on, you know, the website or on Amazon or whatever. Now, with regard to usage and how brand research is done, for ages 16 to 64, the majority of individuals are going to use search engines to research things. So almost 50%, 49.5% of individuals are using search engines to search for material. Now, as a side note for that, that's why search engines like Google, one of their primary ways of attaining revenue is by tracing search patterns. And so they're tracking you as you're searching for things, and they're trying to ascertain, you know, how you think through their algorithms and things like that. And so then that tells them what kind of ads to show you. And so you are the product while you are searching on Google. And they're keeping track of all of your information, and then so they're trying to build a profile on you for what kinds of things you like to look for, and then they show you specific ads based on what you're searching for. So that's how search engines work, and it's a genius, very shrewd way of doing business, because search engines are so essential to our life, and so many people use those. That's why personally I've stopped using Google, because I don't like people tracking me. So I use DuckDuckGo, just because that's the privacy preferred search engine. It's also why I tend to use Brave browser now because one of my friends who works in the aggregate information gathering systems told me that that's what they all use because that's one of the best browsers for protecting your privacy and stopping that kind of tracking and whatever. So that's something to be aware of, is that you're always being tracked online. Every click that you make, every search that you run is feeding the algorithms of these companies, these multi-billion dollar companies to building a profile about you and then feeding ads to you based on who you are. So search engines are the primary means for most people. Half of people are researching through search engines products. And I definitely fall into that category. But social networks come in at a close second. About 44% of individuals use social networks to find out about brands or products. And then consumer reviews comes in as third, and then the brand and product websites come in at fourth. Now, with regard to how that's divided by age, though, if you're 16 to 24 years old, you actually prefer using the social networks rather than search engines, just barely. So it's 49 to 46%, or 50% to 46%. But all other age categories prefer using search engines, but those who are 16 to 24 year olds tend to rely on what their peers are saying in the social networks with regard to products and companies. So if your friends say this product is good or it's not, that gives them more weight. That's what they're relying on for their research rather than using a search engine and, you know, ascertaining data that way. And so that's an interesting. As the age ranges get older, the groups become more and more dependent on search engines rather than social networks as being the means of gleaning information about online brand research. And so I think that's a fascinating insight. So I gave just a broad spat of data. I think there's, if I remember correctly, there's like 300 pages in their report. I just went to their summary and went through some of the main items there. And the thing to review is obviously the social media usage is very high for most individuals. Remember, 2.5 hours a day, that's pretty significant. And so that's going to mean, okay, thinking critically for our own selves, what does that mean? And what about for those people that we're interacting with on a daily basis? Also, social media usage isn't limited to one app or program usually. 7.5 is the average. And so that means people are being influenced in multiple ways. And obviously, the social media usage is continuing to be on the rise. And so that's something that's very significant. And we ought to be aware of the age disparity with how even the younger individuals are going to be using social media even more so than the prior generations. And that's just kind of how the world has geared everything. The culture is pushing everything toward that feeling and toward that usage. So when we think about those things, as Christians, how are we to think critically about this? And I do think this is important. I would shy away from two opposite extremes. One would be to say that Christians should never use social media whatsoever because it's of the devil or something like that. But I would also shy away from saying that, you know, there should be no critical evaluation and you can just use social media however you want because everybody else uses it. So I basically, at some point, I wrote a blog post talking about seven principles or ideas that we need to think through with regard to social media. And one of the motivations of that was I actually had read a book called 12 Ways Your Phone is Changing You. And I just found that really helpful. It was pretty provoking for my mind, that is, with regard to just really analyzing, you know, how is, you know, my phone changing me? And it obviously was a very, very strong discussion on social media usage. So I want to give kind of, you know, these warnings or critical thoughts on the social media usage. So the first thought that I would want to give is that social media can often lead to negative peer pressure. And that's a huge red flag. So this is something that That's actually being recognized now in the realm of even transgender studies. And so this is one of the interesting things that, you know, having worked with youth groups and all these things, I just really encourage parents to be very, very careful with what access you give your teenagers to social media. I mean, it's very difficult for me to imagine why young kids should have access to social media. Won't they feel left out? Well, you know, honestly, it doesn't really matter. Social media is not where people develop people skills. That's not at all the case. But what is being found even in secular circles now is that you have this peer pressure within social media circles, which influence behavior detrimentally. So a classic example of this would be in the transgender community. Because I've done some research on transgenderism, I have some podcasts on that and whatnot. One of the interesting articles that I've come across on Psychology Today, so not a Christian website, but the title from a November 2018 article was entitled, "Why is Transgender Identity on the Rise Among Teens?" And so the tagline for that is, "A new study of social contagion raises important clinical and ethical questions." So in this survey/article, basically the author says, in a recent survey of 250 families whose children developed symptoms of gender dysphoria during or right after puberty, Lisa Littman, a physician and professor of behavioral science at Brown University, found that over 80% of the youth in her sample were female at birth. So right out of the gate, the author says there's a gender gap here. There's some distinction here which we can't really make sense of, where most of these transgendered individuals in these teenage years are female. Over 80%. That's pretty crazy. And going on in the article, there were some identifying marks how you could predict essentially who would fall into those categories. And so the article says, first, many of the youth in the survey had been directly exposed to one or more peers who had recently come out as trans. So there's peer pressure there. But then also, second, 63.5% of the parents reported that in the time just before announcing they were trans, their child had exhibited a marked increase in internet and social media consumption. They were following popular YouTubers who discussed their transition and thus gave a motivation for this. So when you look at the data points, and by the way, I should also make a note, there's a book out there by Abigail Schreier called Irreversible Damage. And Irreversible Damage by Abigail Schreier, the subline of the title is "The Transgender Craze Seducing Our Daughters." She's not a Christian. She's more aligned with the feminist viewpoint, but just a phenomenal view, data that she collects on the transgender movement and how it's negatively impacting teenagers, specifically teenage girls. And one of the things that she points out, she cites this study, but also has a lot of other access to data, which is phenomenal. She just talks about how it's pretty much beyond reasonable doubt that a lot of the teenage girls that are coming out as transgender are doing so as part of this social contagion, where they don't view themselves as being forced into something, but they want to experience the acceptance and the group identity that they see, you know, their friends or others that they admire on social media or whatever participating in. And so it's interesting because the world is saying to us, you know, transgender, if people want to do something, just let them go that way. And that's also one of the, you know, jaw-dropping points that she makes, is that in the typical treatment guidelines for those who identify as transgender, you aren't allowed to question them at all. You are only allowed to affirm them. And so there is no pushback or assessment saying like, well, what is causing this? Let's talk about that. No, you're just supposed to push or allow them to go on and affirm them with what they want to do and how they want to transition, et cetera. But one of the things that she points out is that some of the girls and individuals who have detransitioned or who have gone away from these feelings of gender dysphoria, some of the best success that they've had is by disconnecting from social media and in some cases moving. So it's interesting how the world, the cultural push of transgender craze is that, no, this is just who they are. We need to let them be who they really are, whatever. But that's not the case, because if what's going on can be solved by disconnecting from social media and moving, then that's not actually who that individual is. And so it's very revealing in many cases that social media leads to these negative pressures. And as Christians, obviously, we acknowledge that this isn't limited to the transgender movement. It's just so easily identifiable in the transgender movement, because you can objectively ascertain, are these traceable elements, but you don't need to be a genius to figure out that there are other elements that could be fed through the social media grapevine as well. And so we understand as Christians, social media is a breeding ground for negativity. What I mean by negativity is anti-God behaviors. And so you need to be very careful with that. It's so easy to give into the things that you see on display in social media. You want to act the way that you see, or you want to be accepted in a group that you value or whatever. So that's something that should be very concerning to parents, to Christians in general, social media having this tremendous negative effect. And we can talk more about that in other points. So that's point number one. Point number two is simply that social media can be a time waster. Now, when we looked at the data, 2.5 hours is the average use. But obviously, as individuals are younger, their time usage on social media actually increases. And so there are many individuals who spend hours and hours on social media beyond the average. And they do it just to fill time or to waste time. And as Christians, we shouldn't be shy about talking about how we are to redeem the time, as Ephesians 5:16 talks about, because the days are evil. And, I think anybody who's used social media has experienced the death scroll, where you just keep going until you die. You just keep scrolling because you're not looking for anything. You're just continuing to scroll. And social media algorithms have tried to make it so that you're always attracted to see what's coming next and whatever. So it's just going to be a time waster. So perish the thought that you could have prayed more, or you could have read your Bible more, or whatever. But social media is often an incredible time waster. I've actually been really encouraged recently by a couple individuals who actually told me that they were getting rid of, or at least banning, the social media accounts on their phones and iPads or whatever, and because they just recognized they were using way too much of their time. Every spare second they had, they would just flip on the app and go there. And what a time waste. I just thinking practically, is that really how you want to stand before the Lord? And the Lord said, is that really all you did for me? You just lived life, and every spare second you got, you just flipped on social media and were scrolling. You didn't talk to the people next to you. You didn't share the good news of the gospel. Obviously, social media is going to go down as one of the biggest time wasters in the history of humanity. And so we need to acknowledge that. Now, I'm not denying that social media can be beneficial. I actually find many of my good articles that I like to archive and catalog for even podcasts or things like that on social media. So there is a good use, but you need to be intentional about that. It can't just be controlling you. You need to control it. So that's number two. Number three, social media can promote jealousy. Now, this is something that we really need to recognize as Christians. Social media can promote jealousy. And when you think about this, all Christians struggle with the flesh. And often our flesh craves what we see other people have. And it wouldn't be an issue if we didn't see that they had it. But when we see that they have it, we want it. So social media just exasperates that, because we can now see what a lot of people have. What about that luxury cruise that so-and-so is experiencing? Or what about that job promotion that somebody said? I mean, we can get jealous about people that we haven't even seen for 8 years. And on social media, they can say, oh, I just got, such and such a bonus or something like that. or I just was able to go to Hawaii for free or whatever. And we can get jealous over those things, even though we don't even know this person anymore, or we haven't talked to them in a long time. And it's just ironic how we can be made to sin in such silly ways. But it goes beyond that too. And this is a well-established fact as well. And Facebook itself, remember the social media giant Facebook, who owns all of the three of the top four social media apps. Well, Facebook did an internal study, and in their internal study, they themselves acknowledged that 32% of teenage girls struggle with body perception after using social media. So in other words, they feel worse. So in other words, Facebook themselves acknowledged that through their study that there is a significant portion of individuals, specifically teenage girls in this instance, but there's a broad applicability as well, who actually feel worse after social media. And you know, I acknowledge that there have been plenty of times where I actually feel worse, or I don't feel satisfied or feel content after using social media. Social media is inherently, I don't know if we can say inherently, but there's a strong connection between social media and discontentment. And so this is a direct quote from Facebook's internal memo talking about this study. It says, "We made body image issues worse for 1 in 3 teenage girls." And so it's a well-established fact that the social media usage is negative in many ways. And so across all groups, individuals are constantly blaming Instagram or other apps for an increase in the rate of anxiety and depression through self-studies. It's a well-established fact, and so we need to acknowledge that. And again, as a Christian parent, I would say, you know, don't just let your kids use social media unfiltered or without supervision. I mean, limit them. That is one of the best things that you can do. You would never let a child just do however much driving they want, no matter what condition they were in. You know, you would never say, "Oh, you went without sleep the last couple of days, so go ahead and take a 4-hour drive." Well, why would we say you're having a hard time, you're sick, or you're weak, you're going through a tough emotional time, just go ahead and go on social media for 4 hours or something like that? That's just the most ridiculous thing in the world. But sometimes we don't think. And so we need to really be on guard against the negativity of social media and how it can promote jealousy or discontentment. Well, on the other hand, too, social media can facilitate bragging. So this would be the next in the line. I think this is number 4. Social media can facilitate bragging. And basically, bragging would just be the flip side of jealousy. On the one hand, jealousy is seeing what other people have and wanting that. Bragging is trying to provoke jealousy in other people. And whether intentionally or unintentionally, we often will facilitate this. You know, we can, and really, it's so easy to do because everybody else is doing it, right? So it's a cultural pressure again, where you can brag about taking a picture of your new car or even taking a picture of your vacation. You know, and sometimes as Christians, we rationalize whatever we do on there as long as we put hashtag blessed. You know, it's like hashtag blessed, you know, I have all these things you don't, you know, whatever. You know, it's just because you put hashtag blessed or I'm so thankful doesn't mean you're not bragging. You know, be careful. Like if you're putting something on social media, it can be something as simple as just taking pictures of your food. I've never really understood why anyone would ever want to take a picture of their food and share it on social media. And I know I'm offending some users who love doing that on social media, okay? But that's okay. I take risks, and I'm willing to take a risk here. Like, I just am not interested in seeing your food. I don't know why anyone would be interested in sharing food, but it's a thing. But, and I'm not saying that that's intentionally a form of bragging, but that could be, right? And you know, just I think a helpful line through all of this is what we do on social media, is that how we would communicate in real life? Like, would we talk about how amazing, and some people would. Some people would talk about how amazing their dinner was last night, and they would describe it in exquisite detail. And that may be fine. There may be genuine joy and happiness in that you want other people to share in, but there may be other motives for that as well, right? If I'm posting on social media a picture of a vacation or something like that, more often than not, it's just because I want other people to see, you know, the good things that I have, and you know, it's a form of bragging in my own life. And so we need to be aware of that. Okay. And so I'm not saying every time somebody posts something on social media, it's bragging. Okay. I'm not saying that, but it can facilitate bragging. We need to be aware of that. Number five, social media can entertain gossip or slander. So we love to know what's happening. We love to talk to people about it. A lot of times, even without social media, we can engage in forms of gossip. But with social media, that problem, again, is made tenfold because we don't see the people we're talking about. It's social media is perpetually talking about people behind their backs, even though they can see it. It's kind of ironic because you talk about people and you're not with them, that you don't feel their closeness, you don't see their reactions. So you can talk about them as if they don't exist, even though they're reading it. And so it's really dark with regard to how you can talk about people and slander them and feel like you're engaging in good quality discussions, especially when people like your post and they share it or whatever. And as they're doing that, it's really just a digital form of gossip or slander. And so the rules for conversation don't change from real life to digital. So I think a rule ought to be, would I talk about, you know, this person this way in front of them? Or if they were standing right here, would we have this conversation? I think that there is a element of tests that needs to be done with regard to that. Obviously, Scripture gives clear guidelines. Out of the heart, the mouth speaks. Matthew 12:36 talks about that. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth. Ephesians 4:29, etc. You have these strong stipulations on wholesome conversation. Moving on to number six, social media can feed anxiety. So although in other surveys, it's apparent that most Americans get their news from social media, new television and news sources on TV are no longer the primary means of getting news. I never watch the news. Most people in my generation never watch the news. I don't even have a TV. And so most people aren't going to be looking at CNN or Fox News or whatever. They're going to be on Twitter or on different social media platforms getting their news that way. And so we're going to be inundated with news all the time because we have constant access to it through our phone, through our tablets, computers, etc. And so that's also a danger because as we have constant access to news, well, news companies need more clicks and they need people to be attracted to come back all the time. So the things that drive the news cycles have always been the same: negative news, anxiety provoking news, warfare, sickness. Nobody's going to want to come back and read about how Aunt Sally has a chihuahua that can do backflips or whatever. That's just not going to drive the internet traffic. And so it's a business. And so the media companies online and social media are going to be driving negative access. The coronavirus pandemic is just incredibly, shall we say, money-making for the news agencies because everyone wants to know, oh, what's the latest death toll? What's the news like in my area? Blah, blah, blah. So you're just constantly driven back that way. And so as such then, because of all the negativity then, you're always being flooded by that. And social media just feeds that anxiety. And so we need to be very, very cautious and careful about that. Even as Christians, I think for Christians, even though some of the world news doesn't really affect us, we can be negatively affected by other Christians. And I can't believe so-and-so would believe that, or I can't believe so-and-so said that. And, you know, this high-profile Christian has come out in support of, you know, so-and-so. And so those kinds of things can negatively affect us as well. And sometimes it's just as well to just shut off social media and just not have that constant barrage of negativity. And I think that's a really healthy thing to do periodically. And so number seven then, social media can wrongly orient our perception of success. And I think this is really important too, because as we see things elevated on social media, especially the thing that we haven't talked about that much is with regard to the social media algorithms. So social media is controlling what you see. I think most people probably know that. They probably don't think about what that actually means, but you're not actually in control of what you see. You think you are sometimes, but the social media algorithms are actually dictating what you see. Now they're working with you to help. They want you to see what you want to see so that you always come back. But ultimately, they make the final decision about what you actually see on your algorithm. So it's a well-established fact through a variety of lawsuits and whatever that Facebook has gotten in trouble, Twitter's gotten in trouble for removing things from certain people's feeds or putting things on there. In fact, Facebook, nobody remembers this because it's so long ago and our attention span is so short. But Facebook got in a lot of trouble years ago. It's probably just like 5 years ago or something like that, where they just did their own little self-study on unwilling participants on Facebook, where they would show them only negative statuses by their friends or only positive statuses by their friends, and then track how that influenced their own status updates. And so Facebook controls those kinds of things. And in so doing, that can wrongly orient our perception of success, because we can see people online and it's viewed as successful people in social media. And this happens in so many different ways. You just think about maybe the ideas of social justice and everything like that. Is you'll see somebody come out in support of like Black Lives Matter or something like that, and so everyone's like, "Oh, good for you," or "I'm so glad you're doing this," or whatever. That's so good for you to do that, etc. And so now social media, and it's shared so many times, liked so many times, and now, interestingly enough, places like YouTube have actually disallowed the ability of the users to see dislikes. So you're not actually allowed to see if people dislike things anymore. So now you are only being influenced to be able to see if people like something or not. And so even if more people don't like something than they do like something, you actually don't perceive that. So only you're only perceiving a success now. So it's all a game. You need to remember that. It's all a game, and it will often wrongly orient our perception of what is successful or what is good and what is evil. And so we need to understand that just because something's liked, just because something is shared more, just because more comments are given on something, doesn't mean that it is truly successful or truly appreciated by the majority of people. Or you even have the idea of, well, well, let's put it this way. Now social media companies try to limit the existence of bots on their programs, but it's a well-established fact that bots do exist. So you have like bots liking, commenting, whatever. And so sometimes computer algorithms and, you know, people running these systems can often elevate certain statuses or whatever in ways that make them seem like they're more popular. And so that's all things to keep in mind. It's a very convoluted system. And so that could wrongly orient our perception if we're saying, wow, this is really viewed as the pinnacle of success. Well, that may not be the case, and so that may influence us wrongly. Now, last but not least, social media. This is number eight. Social media can distract us from the essential. And I think this is a fitting way to conclude with regard to this, thinking about this from a biblical worldview, is that when we have social media, especially on our smartphones, we check it all the time. In fact, there have been multiple studies that have talked about this. One study I read said that we check our phones every 4.3 minutes. 4.3 minutes. That means during this episode, I don't know how long this episode has been, but you've checked your phone, you know, at least probably 10 times, right? So you've, or around 10 times, you've checked your phone. If that's you, I pity you. But that's good to actually be aware of these things and say, like, wow, is that really true? Do I really check my phone that often? And it can distract us from the essential. And I just really value people who are willing to put their phones aside and they're willing to even, you know, take social media sabbaticals, as they call them, or even just say, you know what, I'm just going to leave my phone at home. I'm going to leave my phone in the car. I'm going to I'm not going to text today or whatever. You know, those things are all valuable because that can be distracting. Social media is not essential to our life. I don't know if you knew this or not, but people lived for a long time before smartphones and before social media. I know it's difficult for us to imagine sometimes is that, you know, there was life before Facebook. There was life before Twitter and before Instagram and all those things. I don't know how we lived, but we did somehow. It was a dreary existence. But the people who lived before all these things were somehow a little more productive than us. And I wonder exactly, if we can make that connection or not. But as Christians, let's bring it back to this. As Christians, like, you know, are we really okay with checking our phone every 4.3 minutes, spending 2.5 hours on social media a day, and not having a quiet time, not being able to spend 5 minutes of reading God's word, praying? Is that really the stand? Are we okay standing before Jesus at the end and saying, yeah, Lord, sorry I didn't read the Bible as much as I should have, but I sure enjoyed Twitter, or I sure enjoyed Instagram or TikTok or whatever. That just is cringeworthy, isn't it, to stand before your Lord and Savior and have to acknowledge that? Now, I'm not saying that Christians should abandon social media. I think that there's a need for social media, and I've actually had some really good interactions with people on social media, introducing them to some biblical resources, pointing them to the gospel and things like that. And so there's a benefit to that. But again, we need to be in control of social media. Social media should not be in control of us. And so I would just encourage us as we're living in a new world, 2022, the world of social media, which has just really been driven into that, especially by the COVID crisis and everything like that. We ought to think critically about this, and especially as we parent the next generation and as we are Generation Z, the millennials, et cetera, this is something we need to be very much aware of. And for the most part, I think many of us have some improvement to do in our lives, and we ought to live that way. So I hope this episode, albeit a little different, was helpful for you. If not, you can always tell me that. Reach out through the contact form on my website. You can visit my website, petergaming.com, see some of the articles that I've written on social media or some of the other subjects. You can also visit the Shepherd's Theological Seminary website at shepherds.edu. And always look forward to hearing from you. If you have any comments, thoughts, always appreciate those that reach out. Until next time, may the Lord bless you and keep you, and make his face shine upon you.